Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am thrilled to have Carla D. Bailey on the show today. Carla is a senior leader of learning and organizational development at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. Carla, I am just so excited today. I think you and I, we met recently. We were both on a speaker panel at Olin, but there was an instantaneous connection with the two of us.
I would agree.
And so I'm like, boy, we are cut from the same cloth. I've got to have Carla on the podcast. And I'm so excited just to have you here today and just for your wisdom to go out to our listeners. And so thank you so much for making the time.
Well, Lisa, first of all, I want to say you're welcome and say thank you. I feel very honored and privileged to be here today to spend time with you as well as with your listeners and to share.
We've got a lot of things to talk about. So I just want to jump in. Can you talk to us a little bit about your growing up?
Yeah, so a pretty standard childhood. I am from a family of three siblings. I'm the youngest and the only daughter. You notice I said youngest and not baby.
Right.
I'm the youngest of three. I have two older brothers, Jimmy and Rodney, and my brother lives in Dallas, and he is an entrepreneur as well, doing very well, and just did a recent Shark Tank competition, and he was thriving in economic development. My oldest brother is in the South, and he has a chain of grocery stores in the South. And so we come from parents who've been married 52 years.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, growing up, we're very family-oriented, very close. I love my brothers, but I have to tell you one secret. I would beg my parents for a sister.
And so
my parents would often tell me that it just wasn't God's will. They never did anything to prevent getting pregnant after me. It just never happened.
It just didn't happen.
And I used to put my hand on my hip as a little girl, and I would say, you know what, Dad? After I graduate from college, I'm going to get married, and I'm going to have two boys and two girls. And well, I can tell you today, I am married after graduating from college, but my husband and I only have two. We have a son and a daughter. And so my father often says, where's the other two?
Right. That's funny. Well, you know what? I'm laughing because I'm thinking, you've got a lot of sisters.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of sisters now, right?
I do.
And friends.
I do. But
I hear you. I grew up an only child. And I will tell you, I used to tell my mom and dad, I want an older brother. That's all I wanted was an older brother. They couldn't really do anything about it then, you know?
Yeah.
But that's a great story. Well, so, yeah, I mean, you've had quite an amazing journey, and you've been an entrepreneur yourself, and now you're at WashU. And talk to us a little bit about how you got into education leadership and performance management and organizational development and all the things that you're doing.
Sure. Well, I can tell you, while I have been very fortunate or very blessed to have a very successful career in corporate America in the area of human resources and organizational development, what many people don't know about me is that I really wanted to be a big Broadway star.
And is
so,
that right?
Yeah, in high school, I did a lot of theater, was a big thespian and show choir. And so I changed my major sophomore year in high school and started more of a business focus. But my love for leadership development really started when I was 15 years old. So my parents in high school really didn't want me to have a job, but really to focus on education and maybe community service. So one of the things they did allow me to do was to be a candy striper at Barnes Hospital. So at the ripe age of 15, again, I had the wonderful privilege of being a candy striper. My very first assignment as a candy striper was to work the courtesy card. And for those of you that may not be familiar with what a courtesy card is, it's a huge card that you would go to the gift shop every morning, fill it up with all type of goodies and toiletries, and then you would take that cart from floor to floor, visiting the patients that were unable to leave their rooms and go to the gift shop. And so a little bit of that job description, too, was to add joy and cheer to their day. And so I so enjoyed doing it, and I did that for about 4 months. But then I've always been a very ambitious and very driven young lady, even from a child, my parents would tell you. And so I went to the director of volunteer services, and I had a conversation one day, and I said, you know, I really enjoyed adding cheer to the patient in the hospital. I said, but I know there has to be more. And so what else is there for me to learn, you know, and to explore? And she says to me, okay, little Miss Ambitious, I'll get back to you. And so she came back to me on a Friday, and she handed me an envelope with information of where I was to report on that following Monday. To my surprise, I get home and I read the information, the assignment, and it's to report to the human resources department at Barnes Hospital. So I went there, and at the time, the person who was the VP of Human Resources was a lady by the name of Bobby Wiggins. So Bobby Wiggins sat me down before she proceeded to tell me what to do. And she kind of talked to me about why is it that I wanted this new assignment. And so when I got finished, she says, yeah, I hear your name is Little Miss Ambitious. So here's what you're going to do. When you're filing, you're not just going to file papers, but you're going to pay attention to what you're filing. She would say things like, when you are with me, you're going to pay attention and make notes. And then anything that I do from your observation will debrief and talk about it. So I would often go and sit in with her at the age of 15 when she would do coaching sessions or a consultation with leaders and talking about their particular leadership style, maybe when they were leading ineffectively. I would sit in on meetings with her when employees would come in and say that they were experiencing the treatment of poor consequences of ineffective leadership and how they were being treated unfairly by their leadership. I sat in on training classes with her. And my parents, they were really big about us being readers. And so at home, I was reading all these leadership books as a child.
As a 15-year-old.
I was reading things like John Maxwell, Today Matters, or I was reading other things like some of the Covey books as well. And so the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. So I would go and discuss some of the insights that I would gather from the book with the director, Bobby Wiggins. And she would say, yeah, you're really taking a liking for this leadership thing. And I did. And ever since then, from just her serving as my personal mentor at 15, me reading the leadership books, I've become a student of leadership ever since. And I knew one day that if I did not go to Broadway, that I would spend my time holding some senior level leadership position within some corporation, really helping leaders to lead effectively and being an advocate for employees fighting for their fair and equal treatment. And I can tell you that's what I've been blessed to do in my 20 plus years of my career. I've really dedicated myself to being a student of leadership and really coming alongside and partnering with leaders to help them to be more influential and to build powerful relationships.
Carla, you know, there's just one thing missing, your passion. If you could just be a little bit more passionate about this subject, no, I'm totally teasing about that. I can just see the passion all over you. Well, there's so much packed into that story that you just told us. The first observation that I have is you did not wait for somebody to come and tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, I've got something else here for you.
Absolutely.
You went and said, hey, this candy striping, I've loved this. I've loved bringing joy to the patients, but I know there's got to be more. So you raise your hand. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing I noticed. And then the second thing, Bobby Wiggins took the time that was necessary to bring you into situations so that Absolutely. You could learn. I love what she told you. Don't just go file this paper. Mm-hmm. I want you to read it. I want you to understand what is it that you're actually filing. And I'm just thinking as leaders, we need to constantly be looking for those people that we can bring under our wing and do the same thing. So
Absolutely.
You need to have eyes that are wide open so that you can see those ambitious people because, boy, there's just no substitute for that. When you have somebody that is eager to learn and eager to grow, there's no substitute for that.
Absolutely, Lisa, you're absolutely correct. I believe that as a leader, that's part of what we're called to do is to help others rise higher. And oftentimes we see things in people that they have not yet seen in themselves. And so that unrealized potential, or what I often refer to as greatness, untapped. How do we help people to take their inner greatness from untapped to unleashed and help them to live an unstoppable life, whether that's personally or professionally? But yes, helping them to have initiative, to helping them to stay curious and wanting to do and be more as well.
Yeah. I just love that. So you became a leader But then what I see you doing, you're taking it a step further and you're growing leaders.
Absolutely.
You've done that your whole career. That's wonderful. Well, talk to us a little bit. Now you're at Washington University. You've been there for several years now. Tell us a little bit about your role there. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your role. And you and I have had a few conversations, even about some conversations you've had recently about preparedness. And I would love for you to tell our listeners a little bit more about that.
So in 2014, I decided in addition to running my own company is to join Washington University. And I joined as their leader of learning and organizational development. And I get the wonderful privilege of not only setting the strategic direction for leadership development for the university, but also what I'm most proud of is the team that I lead. I always tell people that I lead a team of very talented, very passionate, and high-performing learning and development professionals. And I could not do what I do without them. And so I give them an opportunity to really unleash their greatness too, mm-hmm. and to really rise to the occasion exposure. And so I give them a lot of opportunities to show initiative and to do some things that maybe not be in their job description, but really to help them grow outside of their scope. And we talked about the conversation you noted about readiness and preparedness. And yes. I was just saying, one of the things you find sometimes with something so simple as your resume. And so one of the members or professionals on my team is my career development coach. And we were just having a discussion lately about some of the clients that she's been seeing internally. And they are getting ready to apply for other positions within the university. But the issue they're running into is that they want this quick turnaround on their resume. Some of them, unfortunately, have not updated their resume for at least 20 years, mm-hmm. sad to say. And we were talking about the importance of staying ready. And if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. And so really being a savvy professional, making sure that you keep that credentials like your resume and your portfolio updated more recently. Mm-hmm. Some people say even anywhere from 3 to 6 months, because you should be ever changing and ever updating.
It's like
your,
a living document.
Absolutely.
It
yeah.
really is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be updating with your latest achievements and accomplishments and making sure that when an opportunity comes, that you don't have to hurry up and get ready, but that you're already ready. And we talked about one of our favorite quotes is that when preparation meets opportunity, that you're ready to step into that next opportunity and level.
It's so important. I had an old boss that would always say one of his favorite sayings was failing to prepare is preparing to fail.
Absolutely.
And I've always loved that quote as well, but it's so true. I mean, we've got to, you know, you may not be thinking, okay, it's important for me to grow in this area right now, but it really is, because when that opportunity comes, you want to be ready to step mm-hmm. into that.
Oftentimes, people feel like if they're not in positions of leadership, then they're not a leader. And I always tell people, well, I've never met anyone in life who's not a leader. And
yes.
so they're like, what do you mean? I don't have a position of power. And I'm just like, you know, leadership has very little to do with position, but everything to do with influence and action. And so each one of us, every day throughout the course of our lives, we're influencing other people, whether we're doing it intentionally or unintentionally, for the good or for the bad, we're always influencing people. So that places each one of us in that leadership position. And so I always say you should be leading something. So I often will say to them, do you have a career? Mm-hmm. And they'll say yes. And I say, mm-hmm. well, you should be leading that career. And so we really challenge our internal employees at Washington University that they absolutely should be sitting in that leadership seat or in that driver's seat, that they lead their own career success. And so you're not waiting for the organization to tell you where you're going to go next and to give you your next promotion, mm-hmm. but you're intentionally sitting in that driver's seat with a plan and a strategy of where you want to go and where you want to end up ultimately within the organization as well.
Yeah, that is so interesting.
Yeah.
I just had a friend reach out to me this morning, and she's looking for her next assignment. And it was so interesting how she put this. She said, you know, I'm creating my job description right now,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and you hear that sometimes. It's like you create the career that you want,
absolutely.
You know, and you're constantly having to work on that. That is just so interesting. So you're passionate about helping all people become mm-hmm. better leaders. But Carl, I know from talking to you, you have a special place in your heart for women.
I do.
And
I
you
do.
Have a special place in your heart for younger girls. And so for you girls that are sitting out there listening right now, did you hear what Carla said? She started reading leadership books when she was 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She is pouring good things into her knowledge base even when she's young. So you're really never too young to start. But talk to us a little bit about that. And Carla, you and I think, you know, are very similar in this, because I have a passion for girls as well. What are some of the obstacles that you see young women facing today? And then how would you coach them to overcome those obstacles?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, Lisa. And when you think about the obstacles, especially in today's world, there are so many that I think they face, even more so. I believe I look at my own childhood and upbringing. I think about my own daughter who's 15 years old today, and she even faced greater challenges than what I did. I feel like the world is just moving at a much faster pace. They're exposed to so much more because of this World Wide Web, social media, and the internet. And so the challenges that she's facing today were some of the things that I didn't have to worry about too much, maybe older age or maybe not ever sometimes, you know, they were so far removed, but now the internet brings everything right to your world and right in front of you. So I would say some of the things they're facing are some of the things that are kind of age old things that they've been facing, like their worth and value and to believing that they are enough. One of the things my mother really taught me growing up, and so this has really helped me to be a very confident woman as well. She taught me how to have healthy relationships with other women. And she always told me that if I lift other women up, it wouldn't diminish my shine. And so I grew up always celebrating other women. So sometimes, you know, how other women may be a little bit competitive or reluctant to say something positive about another woman, even if it's something simple about her outfit or if it's something simple about her skill or something she did well. So I'm very liberal and free with my compliments because I feel like that other sister or woman needs that. So I would say to young girls is to believe in yourself. Believe that you are enough. And because I am a woman of faith, I love the thing my mother taught me that, Carla, you are God approved and he has given you great value. That I am God approved and he has given me great value. And she would say to me after that, so do you need to seek your value from other things? I said, no. She says, so there's nothing in this world that could give you more value than you already been given when you were created. There's not a thing, there's not a person. And so I find my center, my core, to be centered in that Christ approval and worth that he's given me. So I don't look for it in validation from things of where I live, my zip code, the education I've obtained, or for my job title. I don't look for it from other friends, how many friends I may have or may not have, how many people may be in my fan club or not, how many likes I get on social media. So I don't have to look for it in superficial things like that because I know where the foundation of my confidence and my value and my worth really lies. And so that's the message I would say to them today too.
I love that.
Another thing was affirmations. My mother was really big, and so I passed son to my daughter and start speaking words of affirmation to say what God says about them, how they were fearfully and wonderfully made, how they can do anything, you know, through Christ that strengthens them, and that there's no weapon that formed against them shall prosper. And so how they're overcomers. So your self-talk, oftentimes we listen to what other people say about us, but I often tell my daughter, it's not what other people say about you, but it's what you say about yourself. It's your own self-talk. Because oftentimes, even if it's positive, if I tell you, Lisa, that you are wonderful, you're amazing, and you're fantastic and phenomenal, but if you don't believe that message yourself, then it's your self-talk will win out. So it's the messages that we tell ourselves. And so that own positive self-talk that I am enough, that I am capable, that I am well-equipped, that I am powerful. You know, and so those messages that you tell. And so every day, I also often do in some talks, I'll have young girls to hold up a mirror and to tell them, repeat after me, and to look in the mirror and say, I like me. I love being me. I am enough. I am special. I am unique. And I celebrate that. So it's really just that positive talk and really silencing the voices of the outer critic as well.
That is wonderful. So powerful. Well, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with Carla D. Bailey. Let's face it, the future is mobile. There's a good chance that you are listening to this show right now on your phone. Have you explored how you can move your business mobile too? Our mobile apps team at Technology Partners makes it their mission to move our clients into the hands of their employees and customers and change their business processes to meet the demands of their users. Let's work together and build a dynamic mobile app for your team. Go to tpi.co/mobile apps and get the conversation started about how we can help you get your new application off the ground. So, Carla, there are 16,000 employees at WashU.
Yes.
Three different campuses that your team is responsible for. I mean, I'm sure that you have seen every level. You've seen people that are wanting to grow and people that maybe haven't done too much to grow. I mean, how important is it for people to continue to grow themselves? How important is that? And talk to us a little bit about that.
I think it is the number one priority is to stay on this path of continuous growth. According to research, it says that our skills, the skills that you and I have today, have a shelf life of 2 to 3 years. and some researchers even say less than that before they become outdated. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important if we're going to make sure that we keep our professional edge or our leadership edge and keep growing and to be marketable and position ourselves for that next level opportunity or promotion, that we have to stay in a state of continuous growth. And so that learning agility to make sure that we're learning, that we're staying relevant, to making sure that we are upskilling or retooling, and to make sure that we're stepping away from the day-to-day. I can't tell you so many times you get into the thick of things, especially at our medical school campus. A lot of times we understand they're around patient care, and patient care is very important. But I also say, and oftentimes you'll find leaders saying, well, I don't have time to allow people to come away to get learning or to training. And I always say, challenge them that I dare that you don't have time not to allow them to step away from the day-to-day to get that training. Mm-hmm. Because what you'll find, I always tell them, people either do one or two things. They either leave and quit, or they stay and quit. And I don't know about you, but I think the latter is worse.
Yes.
To have people stay and quit. Because when you see people stay and quit, they may have the tenure, but if you look through certain pockets throughout the organization, you can see very clearly that they've stayed because they have the tenure. But they clearly quit as well because they're disengaged or they're giving mediocre and average performance at best. Mm-hmm. And I always say to a leader, if you had an opportunity to take that disengaged employee and to re-engage them or to raise their level of productivity, would you be interested? And they're like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Right.
Right.
And I say, well, did you know that development is a great way to do that? It's a great tool and resource to be able to re-engage them and to reconnect them. And so sitting down, just coaching them and having a conversation about, what is it that you're doing at work when you feel most alive? And what is it that you would like to be doing more of in the next 1 to 3 to 5 years? And so you think about even the millennials, the workforce, you know, it talks about too, in a few years, the majority of the workforce will be millennials. And so millennials are entering the workplace with an expectation of wanting to be on a path of continuous growth and development. And so if that's their expectation coming into the door, then that organization would do well to make sure that they're creating opportunities to keep that motivation. There's nothing worse than going out and recruiting highly talented and skilled and motivated employees and bringing them into the organization just to demotivate them by not meeting their expectations.
Right. I mean, people can actually die on the vine. And I'm thinking, as you're talking about these developmental opportunities, mm-hmm. Carla, sometimes even if a passion has somewhat subsided,
yeah.
it can reignite that in someone.
Absolutely.
If they're learning new things, right? I mean, it just keeps us so much more engaged. So the organization has a responsibility.
Absolutely. It's a shared partnership.
Yes.
We said earlier that the individual sits in that driver's seat, that they own their own career. I always say you own the career, the company owns the job. But being in that leadership seat, so there's a shared responsibility between three parties. The employee who is driving and leading the career. Then you have the manager who is their partner and giving them support and being their success ally and helping them to grow and develop and creating opportunities for them to do so within the workplace. And then you have the organization who is setting up structures of promotional opportunities and mm-hmm. growth for them and providing them with the resources and tools that they need to grow. So it's a shared partnership between those three parties.
Mm-hmm.
And getting people to really think about learning and growth, not just as a training event, but really to create a culture of learning. Sometimes you'll find organizations still treat training as a separate entity, as a one-off. So it's a one-time event. Something just happens every now and then. But really, when you have cultures who do it well and created a culture of learning, those companies really have learning that's embedded and integrated into their everyday work life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just that 10% of that formal learning through workshops and seminars or maybe webinars or reading a book, but they also really tap into that other 90% of how we as adults learn. That 90% is broken down to 70%. It's known as that experiential learning, that learning by doing or learning by practice.
On the job.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And those mm-hmm. are things that leaders really have a lot of control over.
Sure.
They can control whether someone mm-hmm. increases their scope of responsibility or expands a project, or they can give them opportunities to lead a special committee or to lead a special project. They can let them job shadow. They can let them do job rotations. So those are things that they can do. Oftentimes, what I've run into, why should I develop people? Because if I do, they'll leave. And I always say, well, the only thing worse than training people and them leaving is not training them and them staying. And so you want to make sure that you're creating these opportunities of growth to keep them, again, engaged, as we talked about, but then also to keep them giving high productivity that you need as well. And then when you do development, it really increases things like retention. And so their loyalty, employees who receive development are more prone to stay with an organization longer. Some managers even say that they're afraid to do it because of, I don't have anywhere to promote them, or I can't give them any more money. And so I tell them, it's just a simple little shift. If you can make the shift from where do you want to be in 1 to 3 to 5 years to where do you want to be doing? So a shift from being to doing, because what is right. And so you pose the question, what is it that you want to be doing more of in 1 to 3 to 5 years? Because you're right. Sometimes leaders don't have the opportunity to create a promotional opportunity or to give more money. So yeah, that's the being part. I don't have anywhere to put you. But if you say, what is it that you want to be doing? Mm-hmm. I certainly can control what type of work you can be doing more of and creating those opportunities to support you to do more of that.
Great words of wisdom there. Well, let's talk real quickly before we sign off. I want to talk about something extra. So Carla, you and I have talked a little bit about this, and I love what you have. It's your something extras because you've got three of them, but tell us what you believe the something extras is that every leader needs.
Yeah, I would say very simply put, they need humility, heart, and hustle. Okay. And very quickly, just a one-liner about each, the humility is to make sure that we understand that leadership is not about us, but it's really about those that we lead, and that we model our confidence, not in arrogance. And I would say the hard part is to really make sure that we love people, that we love them well, and that we always make the people that we lead feel like they matter, and so that we love people over processes. Mm-hmm. And then the other is the hustle. That hustle is really just not about doing the hard work. It is hard work, but that's not all it's about. And it's not just hard work and leading and driving results, but it's the hard work of really continuing that continuous learning on ourselves, our personal mastery, to make sure that we're continuing to grow and evolve and be our best selves for us and also for those that we lead. So we're continuing to challenge our own selves to live outside of that comfort zone while we're challenging those we lead to live outside of their comfort zone. And we're hustling to make sure we stay relevant and to make sure that we leave a powerful leadership legacy as well.
You just said something that I love and I so believe. We're growing, we're hustling and changing and growing ourselves for ourselves. But we're also growing ourselves for the people that are entrusted to us.
Making it bigger than just about us. You know, leadership and what we do, the purpose of why we do it should be bigger than just about ourselves, but also those that we serve, more importantly.
Well, goodness gracious, there's so much we could talk about. We'd be here for about 10 hours, though.
Absolutely.
So maybe we'll have to have a version two.
I would love to.
So talk to us a little bit. Is there something, Carla, that you would like to promote?
Yes, I would love for your audience to have an opportunity to connect with me. They can find me on LinkedIn at Carla D. Bailey or on Facebook, Carla D. Bailey Worldwide, LLC. And so I would love to connect with them. And that's a way they can connect with me for booking engagements as well.
Right. And you also are a speaker.
I am a speaker as well.
So if someone would need a great motivational speaker, you would be up for that as well, right?
Absolutely. I welcome the opportunity.
Very good. Well, Carla, it has just been my pleasure to have you here today. I feel like I'm coming away, iron sharpens iron. So I just believe that I'm coming away with more in my tool belt and more things to think about. So thank you so much for sharing your insights and your wisdom with us today.
And Lisa, thank you. I'm equally as delighted to be here with you. Thank you so much.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.